Good day, and welcome to the Agilent NGS Target Enrichment Technical Training for EMEA conference call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Raza Hamid. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon and good morning to everyone on the call. So apologies for the slight delay. We just had some technical hiccups with the new dial-in details and things, but I think we're ready to go. So, yeah, it gives me great pleasure to invite you to this NGS Target Enrichment Call technical training between the EMEA team and the AFO team. So, yeah, so we'll cover a couple of things, really. One is obviously the topic around our NGS Target Enrichment product, and also related to software, we have some sure call updates as well related to that. So we have a couple of speakers, actually, from the SU. So we have Maria starting off the call after myself. We have Jeff, Connie from R&D. And then we'll cover all questions through the chat box, please. And then in the end, Anik will do the short call presentation. So with that, if I can pass it over to Maria. Maria, feel free to begin.
Thank you very much, Raza. Good morning, everyone. Good afternoon to you folks in Europe. Today, I will be introducing to you SureSelect UXT, maybe a reintroduction for most of you, but I would like to cover those points as well. So thank you very much for joining the call. So SureSelect UXT is basically a product that gives us more from less, and the real highlight here is the same-day sample to sequencing workflow. So our agenda for today will be covering the introduction to SureSelect UXT, and this will be given by myself, Maria, and SureSelect QXT's transposase-based technology. This part will be given by Jeff Fox from R&D in La Jolla. The library prep for whole genome sequencing will be covered by Connie Hansen, and Mike Borns from R&D in La Jolla as well will be covering the FastHive target capture and enrichment portion. After all these things are covered, then we will be entertaining questions from all of you. So what is SureSelect QXT? Is it really just another Nextera? And I've heard about, this question asked by a lot of you folks. Absolutely not. So it's a transposase-based library prep. It's not the same enzyme as Nextera's. It has better tolerance for GC content differences of the template and better tolerance for slight deviations on input amounts. Now, just to qualify that, we have to be within range. So we'll talk about that a little bit later. The second portion of this, and this really refers to the target enrichment portion, is with the recent innovations and developments in the target enrichment technology, we are now leading the market with our one-hour Hive. This makes SureSelect QXT the fastest capture workflow in the market. It is five times faster overall workflow and has the least hands-on time, really 30% less than Nextera. So really differentiating us from our competition. So in a nutshell, for SureSelect QXT, superior performance is derived from the fastest capture-based solution in the market, again, the one-hour Hive workflow, five times faster than Nextera, with major improvements in Hive technology that covers the hybridization itself, buffer and wash workflow, the low-input compatible workflow, and the streamlined workflow that, again, gives us 30% less hands-on time requirement compared to Nextera. Now, so what? What does this mean? This allows us to address the bottlenecks that really enable clinical research. This provides a fast turnaround time, compatibility with low sample input, a streamlined workflow, scalability, and as an overall testament to our technology, the sensitivity and accuracy derived from our SureSelect technology. Who really needs this? For our target customers, we are looking at customers with a clear need for a short turnaround time, low sample input compatible workflow, easy incubation-based workflow that enables master mixes, a Covaris-free workflow, which really reduces the setup expense, and Nextera users. And the three benefits of SureSelect QXT are workflow efficiency, best performance, and greatest flexibility. For workflow efficiency, just to kind of introduce you to this, this product, really our strength here is the sample to data in as little as 24 to 36 hours. It's a transposase-based library prep that enables fast, easy, and convenient workflow, a one-and-a-half-hour library prep workflow with only 30 minutes of hands-on time and 3.5 hours overall hands-on time, with no special equipment required for fragmentation. And again, the compatibility with minimal sample input. As the second part of the workflow would be the one-hour hybridization technology that really enables us to have sample to sequencing ready libraries in as little as 5 hours. And when coupled with the fastest sequencers in the market, the MiSeq and the HiSeq 2500 systems, you can really get data in as little as 24 to 36 hours. Now, how do we compare with our closest competitors? Again, QXT will be the fastest enrichment workflow in the market, same-day sample to sequencing. Just looking at our closest competitors and as well as our own offering, SureSelect XT is a one-and-a-half-day workflow with 5 hours hands-on time. Enables 200 nanograms for the low input protocol or 3 micrograms for the standard input protocol. NimbleGen, on the other hand, is at the other end of the spectrum with a 4-day workflow that involves a 72-hour hybridization step and a 1 microgram input. Now, NextEra, and we've always come head-to-head with NextEra in a lot of this sales discussion, so NextEra is still a 1.5-day workflow and involves 2 rounds of capture and wash, and basically a 5-hour hands-on time requirement. Now, they, up until recently, were the leaders in the market with a 50-nanogram input requirement. Now, with SureSelect QXT, we have a same-day workflow, sample-to-sequencing-ready libraries, with only 3.5 hours hands-on time. And again, the strength is the 5 times faster workflow compared to NextEra. The 50-nanogram input really opens up our compatibility to samples with limited availability, and this will include blood-derived DNA from cell line-derived DNA, as well as DNA that can be derived from archived samples or fine needle aspiration. Now, this puts us on par with NextEra rapid capture that, again, requires 50 nanograms. NimbleGen is still far behind with 1 microgram input requirement. Now, the second aspect of this reagent kit is the best performance that it can provide. Now, again, when we look at performance, we look at mapping metrics as well as variant calling metrics. What are really important are getting highly mappable reads with unparalleled on-target with deep and uniform coverage. And why is this important? This is important because you can dial down on the sequencing and save on sequencing costs. Now, as far as the variant calling metrics, which ultimately will be the most important aspect for our clinical researchers, you will be able to get from this kit high sensitivity that enables accurate detection of your SNPs, indels, and copy number variants. And in addition to that, excellent allelic balance provides the confidence you need in order to really determine the calls. Now, with this in mind, we get complete and accurate variant profiling of all samples carried into this protocol. Now, the last aspect is greatest flexibility. SureSelect QXT provides capability for whole genome sequencing, whether small or large genomes, as well as targeted resequencing. And again, targeted resequencing, we can cover both exomes and kinomes, as well as custom designs. Now, as far as custom designs, SureSelect QXT is not just for exomes, as I mentioned earlier. Custom capabilities enabled through Sure Design, and as far as the exome is concerned, you can still plus it with a custom library, and this exome plus feature will be coming soon. On the other hand, as far as analysis goes, and this is all the way to the other end of the spectrum, post-sequencing, SureCall will be coming soon with support for SureSelect. So this is, again, a very important component of our complete workflow solution. Now, just to kind of wrap it up, SureSelect QXT benefits are the following: fastest workflow, superior performance, and complete and flexible solution. Again, I can't stress it enough, it's the 5 times faster workflow with a 1-hour hybridization step. And the capability for low input samples, again, allows us to be compatible with a lot of clinical samples. Now, when is it going to be available? SureSelect QXT will be available for quotes and orders February 12th, and this coincides with AGBT. Now, just to cover a little bit about the kit itself, what's different with the QXT reagent kit? The QXT reagent kit contains the library prep kit and the target enrichment kit. With the library prep kit, and again, the library prep can be ordered separately. This includes the transposase enzyme, fragmentation reagents, as well as the stop solution, and is packaged with the Hercules 2 master mix. The target enrichment kit itself has different blockers and fast hide buffers, and this includes the hide buffer and wash buffer. So keep in mind that these reagents are very specific to SureSelect QXT. As far as the baits are concerned, SureSelect QXT works with XT baits, no change needed. And again, baits are ordered separately. And this can come as either the exome, the kinome, or any custom order. So at this point, I'd like to transition over to Jeff Fox and allow him to discuss with you SureSelect QXT's transposase-based technology. So I'm about to pass the ball to Jeff.
Okay, can you all see the slide, SureSelect QXT technical training?
Yep.
Okay, great. Thanks, Maria. So I'm going to just present a few slides with background. Most or a lot of you have probably seen these slides in the talk we gave a couple months ago, so this should be a review. I'll try to go fairly quickly through these since it is review, and then I'll pass to Connie to talk more specifically about the whole genome part of QXT, which also will be a review, and then Mike will take over with to talk about the FAT type. Let's see, this is advancing. So you're probably all aware of SureSelect XT and XT2. It's our current kits that sample prep takes 3 to 4 hours, and there's relatively long hive times with this. And with SureSelect QXT, we've now improved both the library prep and the target enrichment portion. So with SureSelect QXT, the traditional fragmentation, end repair, ligation are all replaced by a single enzymatic step that takes just 10 minutes to give about a 90-minute total prep time. This enzyme is a transposase that, instead of what you normally think of as a transposon with a big loop of DNA, the transposase in this case just uses a fragment of DNA that's bound and then allows it to fragment DNA and label it with the proper tags for sequencing. So this slide is just a couple of definitions I want to put out there, mainly because at times I hear this referred to as a transposon-based technology, which really isn't the most accurate or best way to refer to it. The transposon is actually the whole piece of genomic DNA that contains the gene for the transposase, and it's the piece of DNA that's moved around. It'd be more accurate to call it a transposase derived technology. That's the enzyme that's encoded in the transposon, and it's what carries out the actual reaction for the QXT. So what allows the transposase to do the fragmentation is this so-called DNA duplex, which is comprised of an end sequence, which is the part of the transposon that the transposase binds to in its normal action. So that's a short duplex DNA. And here, for this application, we attach a single-stranded tag that contains a PCR primer binding site that allows amplification and addition of indices and the sequences needed for cluster generation on the Illumina instruments. And actually, we use two different tags or two different pools of duplex so we can do a paired-end sequencing. So this slide just shows how the reagent is prepared, showing the two different ends or tags that are bound to the transposase. These are actually bound to the enzyme in two separate reactions. And then after they are loaded, they are mixed in an equal molar amount so that we can tag with equal amounts of both ends to get proper PCR and an attachment of the sequencing tags. So this enzyme reagent we call the loaded transposase, and as I mentioned, that's the best way. It's not a transposon, it's just a loaded transposase enzyme. So this animation shows how the reaction works. The blue double lines here represent genomic DNA. You have one of the loaded transposase comes in with its tag. It fragments the DNA and attaches covalently the tag. And in the ideal case, we have the transposase with the other tag come in at some distance away, fragment to yield the proper size fragment, which it can be sequenced, and you have the end here. This, because of the nature of transposase, actually a gap is left, and that is repaired as part of the PCR, an initial step in the PCR cycling in the protocol that repairs that gap and completes the sequence here opposite the sequencing tag. And then you have a PCR-ready fragment that can be further amplified, and the rest of the Illumina sequencing tags are added. So what kind of fragments can we get? Since we have two different tags on the enzyme, and this is a random event, you can actually get fragments where you have both of the same tag, or what we want with the one at each end, or you could get fragments with the other tag at both ends. But fortunately, because of how PCR works, it preferentially amplifies fragments with the proper tag, opposite tags at both ends. So we enrich for the proper fragments that we want for sequencing. Another important aspect of the fragmentation reaction is the ratio of the transposase enzyme to the DNA template. As we increase the amount of enzyme to DNA ratio, more fragmentation takes place, and we get smaller average fragment sizes. Conversely, if we have less transposase, you get less fragmentation and larger fragment sizes. And that you'll see some examples of how we can change the fragmentation size depending on the application, whether it's whole genome or target enrichment. And Connie and Mike will show examples of that. But we definitely stress in our protocol that it's important to have an accurate quantitation of the DNA going into the reaction so that we can get a proper ratio of transposase to enzyme, transposase to DNA. This is just the overall workflow. This is an old slide. I think this is still the same, but Mike will talk about the target enrichment step that's shown down here later. The library prep, the fragmentation, and the early stages are in common between the whole genome and target enrichment. Those are these steps up here. You carry on further to the target enrichment protocol after the initial steps are done. But what Tommy's going to initially talk about is the whole genome part, and that just involves these steps where the template is fragmented and tagged. You purify the fragmented DNA, amplify with PCR, and then purify again after PCR. And Connie will specifically talk about some possible pain points for customers in these initial steps, such as I said, accurately quantifying the template that's going in, as well as the quality of the DNA going in is important. And one step in the protocol that's especially important is we want to be sure that the customers are thoroughly mixing the reaction after it is prepared. So with that, I will pass to Connie, who will specifically talk about some of the aspects of the initial protocol and the whole genome.
Thanks, Jeff. So as Jeff said, the DNA concentration and quality are really important. As the ratio changes, you can strongly influence the shape of the fragments that are produced on a bioanalyzer profile. So the customer really should be strongly encouraged to follow the serial quantifications that we specify in the manual. The good news is that at a sequencing level, even if you have a broad range or of the shapes and the amounts, the sequencing works quite well. But just to summarize, if you have too little DNA in the reaction, you tend to get a smaller size range because the enzyme over-digests the template. This leads to a slight increase in duplications, maybe less coverage, but again, the sequencing will still work. If too much DNA is put in the reaction, the enzyme will underdigest the template. You'll get a larger size range of fragments, and the very largest sizes do not efficiently form clusters on the Illumina platform. So this is just going through. If you had a tremendous amount of DNA, you might get a size range that looks like this. But as you get closer to the amounts that we would like to see, you get smaller and smaller. Well, we don't have to worry about getting too small because we have a spry in the whole genome part of it that cuts out the smaller range that we don't want to see. And these are the profiles that we like to see with the whole genome set. The most desirable average size would be in the 600 to 1,000 base pair range. So this is just showing what happens when you get a much smaller or a pretty large version, and that it's not that big of a deal. If you look at the different coverages, they're very similar. And this is looking at duplication with the bigger and the smaller, the duplication with the, these are duplications, and the smaller libraries have higher duplication rates in most cases, but it's not that bad. And again, as you would expect, the larger ones don't make as many reads because they're not forming the clusters as well. But even though those changes can be large, in the end, the coverage is good. And you can, in this next slide, just to reiterate, if the customer is concerned about their profile, stress that the 600 to 1,000 base pair average size should work well. We have sequence libraries that go from 400 to 1,400 base pairs with good results. For non-human genomes, high percent GC will shift the profile to the left to give you a smaller size range, where low GC will shift it to the right, a larger size range. And if the customer wants to get larger fragments, they can use higher DNA concentrations, and if they want smaller fragments, they can use lower amounts. If the fragment average is especially large and the customer wants to go ahead with it, they can actually seed their Illumina system with increased amount of template or library so that they get higher amounts of clusters. And this is the slide that I was looking for before. It just shows that if you have a very small library or a larger library, they can compensate for each other even though you have less clusters formed. There are larger reads, more complete reads, and so you can get greater coverage, and the duplication can be dramatic, but the coverage turns out to be pretty much good in both cases. So for human whole genome sequencing, we did a comparison with Nextera with four lanes on HiSeq, and at 1x and 10x coverage, the amounts were very comparable when we normalized to 600 million reads. The Nextera did not produce 900 million, so we couldn't compare with them. But you can see in coverage, we're actually a little bit better. And in duplication as well, we're actually a little bit lower, so that's good. And, of course, as you have more reads, your duplication does go up. That's just the math of the situation. So a customer is going to be worried, I think, is the transposase fragmentation bias relative to sonication or fragmentation by other means. And the answer is, yes, it is a little bit. So is the Nextera system. If you look here, this is the result with sonication with XT2, and these are the summary of the different products. And you can see there's highs and lows in it, but if you look at the alignment to the genome, these little chunks of DNA are very, very random, whereas if you look at the Agilent and Nextera transposase systems, even though it looks pretty random at the top, as you go down, you can begin to see that there are commonly used sites, and these are not just that the PCR is amplifying and that you're getting two amplicons represented, but the enzymes do have a bias. Nonetheless, they do get the job done. So why would you use it? Simply that it's much, much easier to use, and it's faster. The most likely point where customers will run into trouble is in mixing. Both the enzyme and the buffer are quite viscous, so they need to be pipetted very carefully. The DNA has a lighter density, and it can float to the top. And most of all, the reaction needs to be mixed very intensively. When we've seen new users try the product, we tell them to mix it very intensively, and they generally think that they are, but it really needs to be mixed the full 20 seconds to get this viscosity well incorporated. Another question they might ask, what they always ask, I'm sure, can I stretch the kit by using smaller volumes? We have not tried it, and we do not recommend it. Typically, we get more than enough product at the end, but mixing smaller volumes is likely to really amplify these problems with mixing and could lead to variability in the fragmentation results. Can the customer amplify with more cycles? Again, we do not recommend it. The yield is typically more than enough for whole genome sequencing. With more cycles, duplication will increase, and the sometimes you can get an artifact showing as a secondary product arises with more application cycles. So these are the differences between the capture and the whole genome, and this might have changed since the time we originally made this slide. Mike says it's fine. In the TE, we get two times the amount of transposase is used. It aims for a smaller fragmentation profile for improved on-target percentages. Different purification ratios of ampere beads are used, again, because the whole genome wants larger size ranges, and the TE wants them to work best for on-target percentage. The post-fragmentation steps are different. There are more cycles for a PCR. Whole genome uses 5, TE uses 7. Different primers, different PCR steps. And, of course, capture and washing, post-capture PCR with indices. And with that, I think I'm going to turn it over to Mike.
Hi, this is Mike Borns. I'm going to be talking about the target enrichment part for the FASTHIBE. But basically, the current XT-XTT target enrichment hybridization takes anywhere from 16 to 24 hours, depending on which kit you're using. So it takes up to 2 days for sequencer-ready samples, whereas our new QXT target enrichment with fast hybridization is performed in a little over an hour. So sequence-ready samples can be prepared. That includes your pooling and ready to go on the sequencer in at least 7 hours, sometimes under, depending on how many samples that you're doing. And this includes the full exome V5. So as Connie mentioned, the DNA concentration for your initial fragmentation is important. It's for whole genome. It's also important for target enrichment. We do want to have the customer follow the DNA quantitation that's specified in the manual. That will give a particularly accurate quantitation, so they should be encouraged to follow this. But as in whole genome, the target enrichment also will work with a very broad fragmentation range. So even if they don't get it fragmented perfectly, it still works just fine. But in general, we see the same sort of thing. If you have too little DNA, you typically get an over-fragmentation, so a smaller size range. The percent duplicates do go up slightly, but they still will hit all the performance specs that we're going to guarantee that they will get. And too much DNA, you'll get a bit of an underdigestion and a larger size range. And with this, you'll get a slightly lower duplicates, but you'll get also a lower percent on target. But once again, it's still well within the range that performance range that we would be claiming. So it really isn't a big deal if they don't get it right the first time. So this is sort of an example of the different fragmentations. This would be an example of an overfragmentation if you didn't add enough DNA or you fragmented for, you did your digestion for too long. Typically, your peak will shift to under to 245 base pairs, and you'll get sort of a concave. The optimal fragmentation pattern that we would look for and that the protocol, if followed properly, will generate is this blue, where you get a peak anywhere from 245 to 325 base pair, and you get sort of a straight downward line here. And then an underfragmented, you'll typically get a rounded profile. The amount of larger fragments increases to give you this rounded shape, and that typically will give a peak that's over 325 base pairs. It typically will also give you a very broad peak as well. So you would, following the manual, you'll get this blue peak, and this is really what you should aim for. But either of these will typically work. So this is an example of your sequencing results that you'll get. So with an underfragmentation, your percent duplicates will be a little bit lower, but your percent on target will also be a little bit lower. But this is still quite a very good result. The coverage is also very good, with over 90% down to 20 times. The optimal fragmentation typically has slightly higher, but then you get a much higher percent on target, and once again, your coverage is quite high. Then an overfragmentation, where you have this concave, you can see that now your percent duplicates are starting to get up a little bit higher, but your percent on target also is a little higher as well. But once again, your coverage is fine, and typically between the different patterns, the coverage is mostly unaffected. It pretty much works, and this entire range of performance that you get is within the performance claims that we're making. So either way, even if they're not right in the middle with their fragmentation, if they're sort of under or over fragmented, they'll still get very good sequencing results. So this is just sort of just a summary of the complete workflow all the way through having your samples indexed and pooled and ready for cluster generation. So typically the library prep is quite rapid, only about an hour and a half. So with target enrichment, with your fast hybridization, capture wash and PCR indexing is only about 4.5 hours. And then when you do your bioanalyzers and pooling, that would add an hour. So you're right about at 7 hours, and you're ready to go ahead and start cluster generation. Okay, and with the fast hive, the question always comes up, how does that work with your full exome? And it works very, very well. Percent on target is very high. Percent duplicates are very good for the transposase sample prep. The coverage, one time, 10 time, and 20 time is very high. So you're not losing anything with your fast hybridization. You're not losing any performance. So it pretty much picks up everything that you need, and it's very, very, very rapid.
Mike, is this your last slide?
I guess it must be.
Not advancing.
Oh.
If I had a variety of slides, I was going to go over the manual just to show some of the differences, but for some reason it's not moving forward.
Let me see if I can try something, actually. Give me one sec. No, I think that, I don't know why, that seems to be the last slide. Yeah, that is the last slide.
Oh, okay. Well, then my other slides were taken out. I was going to go over a few of the differences between the XT protocol and the QXT. But I guess I won't. It's fairly similar. I mean, other than the reagents are different and you have a very rapid hybridization process. But after you do your hybridization, it's post-hive indexing, so then you would go into your indexing PCR, and then your spry cleanups and your pooling and your bioanalyzer the same way.
Yeah. Mike, if I was to give you back presentership, can you share your desktop, and then will you be able to present those additional slides?
Actually, Raza, they were hidden in the deck. The slides were hidden.
Okay, well, if I give it back to Mike, he can just share his desktop.
Yeah. Okay, maybe I can address some questions while Mike is pulling up the slide. Would that be okay?
Yeah, that's fine. I was just going to say, Mike, just go to Quick Start, share your desktop, and your slides will come up. On you go, Maria.
Quick.
Okay.
Okay.
So I'm going to cover some questions that pertain to the library prep. That way we can address the target enrichment questions later on. So from Scott, do we have technical data? Do you have technical data that shows how our enzyme tolerates GC content better than Nextera? So we do have some testing data that shows different percent GC and how we're able to cover it, so we can definitely send that along. Gene, are there problems with freeze-thaw cycles of the enzyme? I would probably leave that up to R&D to comment on. Anyone from R&D? Stability of the enzyme. The enzyme seems pretty stable with freeze thaw. There is glycerol in the enzyme mix, so you will notice that it will not freeze. So it's maintained at a temperature that is good for its stability. From Chi, have we tested clinical samples like FFP? No, we have not. Not for QXT. From Scott, would we still recommend cancer and FFP users to go the XT route due to library complexity? If the customer needs maximal complexity of the library, we will still recommend XT. QXT's value really is in the short workflow and compatibility with low sample input, down to 50 nanograms, because as we all know, low input short select XT has also been released. From JC, I guess Jen Carter? Maybe?
John-Claude.
Is QXT compatible? Oh, John-Claude. Sorry, John-Claude. Is QXT compatible with recently launched NGS systems from Illumina, NextSeq 500 and HiSeq 10? So HiSeq 10, we're pretty sure it's compatible. NextSeq 500, I'm still trying to gather information on that. Ion Proton systems, we currently do not have QXT for Ion Proton release. From Bram, if we recommend XT for FFPE, will we also offer FastType option for this product line? So we are looking into this at the moment. I think Mike's desktop is up, so I will transition over to Mike. Thanks, Mike.
Okay, so this is just another sort of a comparison of the workflow between the XT and the new QXT. Typically, the reaction setup is a little faster because with this one, you're having to use individual components to set up your reaction rather than master mixes. And also, typically, you have to speed back your samples to get 3.5 microliters. With this protocol, you don't have to speed back your samples prior to hybridization. You can just use them as is. The blocking is a similar amount of time. The hybridization, though, is very, very rapid. It's 16 hours with the XT, and it's a little over an hour with the fast hybridization. Then we have the same 30-minute streptavidin capture, same 40-minute washing, and PCR setup's a little faster because this is with a master mix rather than a standalone where you have to make the master mix with individual components. PCR cycling is similar, and then this final sprite cleanup is about the same. But with the current XT, it's about 19 and a half hours until you're ready to pull your samples, whereas with the SureSelect QXT, with the fast hybridization, it's only 4.5 hours before you're ready to start pooling and go on to your sequencing. So it's very, very rapid. And as I showed you, basically the speed doesn't have a negative impact on the very large full exome bait sets. You get very, very good results, comparable to the longer 16 and 24-hour results. And what happens here? Why did it go?
Just leave it that's hidden.
I think microbes are hidden. It's causing problems. So, yeah, you're going to have to unselect them as hidden.
Basically, the protocols with the whole genome sample prep are quite similar. One of the main differences is we use our DNA at 20 nanograms per microliter rather than 50 nanograms as the whole genome. So the customer will be adding two microliters at 25 nanograms instead of one microliter at 50. So you'll have an extra microliter in your fragmentation reaction. But the fragmentation itself is exactly the same as far as the incubation. The cleanup is a little bit different as well. We tend to add a 1-to-1 rather than a 0.7-to-1, so we add 52 microliters. And then our PCR is pretty much the same, except we have 7 cycles instead of 5. And then the cleanup after that is a 1-to-1 spry. And then for the resuspension, we resuspend in 13 microliters of water. And then you use one microliter to either run on a bioanalyzer to assess your fragmentation, or you can also use the tape station as well, and that leaves you with 12 microliters. And so then when you go into your actual hybridization, you can just use that 12 microliters as long as you're not exceeding 1,500 nanograms of DNA for your hive. So that cuts out any speed vac step, which really speeds up the process. It's having to speed vac down to 3.5 microliters for an XT protocol really puts the brakes on the speed of the whole protocol. So we bypass. So you can just pretty much put the whole thing in. If your DNA is a little more concentrated, you can just add less than 12 and just make up the difference with water for a 17 microliter total for your block. And so then your block and hybridization incubation step are done on one PCR profile. So you have a denaturation for your blocking. Then you actually have a 10-minute block at 65. And when you're doing your blocking, you can then set up your bait capture part of the hive reaction, and then you would add that after the 10-minute blocking, and then you do your hybridization. Now, the hybridization isn't a constant temperature. It's a cycling hybridization, so you cycle from 65 to 37 for a total of 60 cycles. This takes slightly over an hour, approximately an hour, but with ramp rate, it's a little bit over an hour, but it's very, very rapid. And the storage, you just let it hold at 65 degrees. And while you're doing your hybridization, of course, you would do the same thing you would with XT. You would get your streptavidin beads ready. So when you're finished here with your hive, you would go right into the streptavidin capture, and that's pretty standard. And then while you're doing your 30-minute shaking or rotating to bind your DNA to the streptavidin, then you can go ahead and prepare your you would prepare your washing at this step But basically, it's the same sort of thing. So when you're hiving, you would pair your beads. After your hive, your strep davenin beads are ready. You go right into your strep davenin beads and your 30-minute incubation. While the 30-minute incubation, while you're binding your DNA, then you just go ahead and get your wash buffers prepared. We have three washes in this step, or 365-degree wash and one room temperature wash, which is still similar to the XT. We have a one room temperature wash with the wash buffer one, and then you do three 10-minute washes at 65 degrees with your fast wash buffer. And once again, when you're shaking or rotating on the nutrator to bind your DNA to the strep davenin beads, you would get your wash aliquoted and set up, which is fairly standard. So then after you're done with your nutrator, you go right into your washes. The washes are pretty simple. It's you just simply pipette to mix your beads in the wash, incubate it 10 minutes per wash, and then after you're finished with your washing, you resuspend in 23 microliters of water and then go into your final indexing PCR, and then of course you use one of the P7s and one of the P5s per sample, so you can do your dual indexing. And then the PCR is fairly standard. And you do a final 10 cycles, and then you do your strep davenin. Well, it's sort of an on-bead PCR, so you add your, as you're familiar with, I'm sure, you just add your 23 microliters of your strep davenin beads directly into your PCR, and then you do your PCR. And then we have a cleanup step. So after the PCR, you briefly stick your, put your tubes on a magnetic separator to separate the strep davenin beads from your PCR reaction before you add your Dynel My1 beads for the purification. And then it's the standard AMP PureXP purification, and this is typically the yield and the electropherogram shape of your index sample that's ready to be cooled. And that's pretty much it.
Okay, thank you very much, Jeff, Connie, and Mike. So everyone, wanted for you to know, we're all very excited about this new product. I hope you got a lot of information from this training. We're very excited by the incredible body of work that R&D has developed for us. This really allows us to have a strong and clear differentiator from our competitors, as well as allowing us to expand our application to cover whole genome sequencing. So thank you very much, R&D, for sharing your insights. This, I believe, is very valuable to the team. Thank you very much. So with this, I'd like to continue on with answering questions from the team. And I'll start off with Juliet. Is the QXT protocol compatible with the Bravo? We are working on automating this solution. From Chi, how is the percent duplicates with ARKit compared to Nextera, and what are the caveats with one-hour hive? So to address the duplicates, and I'll kind of address that by saying something or saying a comment on complexity. As far as complexity goes, our solution is on par with the complexity provided by Nextera. Maybe a marginal improvement on complexity, but pretty comparable. From Jean-Claude, what about Haloplex? How do we position SureSelect QXT versus Haloplex target enrichment? So very, very great question. So what we're going to do is to focus this training on technical aspects of the protocol. We will be addressing this type of question during our sales training, which I believe we have scheduled for later this week. So I hope that's okay. From Tara, do you have data and workflow comparisons against AmpliSeq Exome? So we have run AmpliSeq Exome in-house. We are still generating the data for this, and we will be comparing it to our current solution. Yeah, so one very important thing to remember here is that SureSelect solutions are capture-based workflows, whereas AmpliSeq is an amplicon technology. So, you know, we will be providing results of the comparisons. However, it will be very important to keep in mind that these are very different technologies with very different limitations. and advantages for that matter. From Jean, is the release date firm this time? Can we speak to customers about this? We will be announcing this kit at AGBT, so at that time you're more than welcome to talk about it with your customers. From Scott, how can we explain the equivalent variant calling metrics to XT when the input amounts and the library complexity are much less? Wouldn't you see less calling confidence in a less complex library? Very interesting question. So confidence in variant calling directly relates to the coverage that you're getting. So with XT and QXT, keeping in mind that they are very different in terms of the insert generation, the generation of the insert. So with the XT, we're working with mechanical fragmentation, which generates very random inserts, whereas with QXT, we do work with recognition sites for the enzyme, which gives us inserts that are less random than the XT mechanically sheared fragments. So with that in mind, the complexity is what really distinguishes the two. So though the variant calling metrics are the same, the complexity is what's affected with this protocol. But it's very important to stress to your customers that despite this caveat with complexity, that we are still able to provide the coverage required in order to provide confident variant calling, which ultimately to clinical researchers is what's important. From Melissa, for which applications would a customer use the low input protocol instead of QXT? So as I mentioned earlier, and I alluded to this in previous questions, complexity is still better with SureSelect XT. Even the low input protocol would provide better complexity compared to QXT. So again, just emphasizing that the advantage of QXT is in the fast workflow, real ease of use in terms of the streamlined workflow, master mixes, and short hands-on time, and again, low input compatibility. Let's see. From Jean, can you do QXT library prep with XT2 or XT-based? As I mentioned in a previous slide, QXT library prep will be captured with XT-based. So very important to note, XT and XT2 have different formulations, so making sure that you have XT-based to match up with your QXT library prep would be very important. From Jennifer, if we are offering whole genome library prep with QXT platform, does that mean we will be separating library prep reagents and hybrid reagents in a separate kit that can be ordered? So as I mentioned in a previous slide, library prep kit can be purchased separately in order to enable the whole genome sequencing application. From Jean-Claude, did we test less than 50 nanogram input? What's the lower limit? I believe, and R&D, please comment if I'm incorrect here, we've tested down to 14 nanograms. From Sheila Colby, do we have an IP on this transposase technology? So, for IP, we are working on protecting this, the technology of the fast hive. However, I'm not sure about the QXT transposase.
Yeah, we'll have to check the limitations on the transposon, but
yeah.
For the fast hive, we absolutely are going to be doing that technology.
Exactly. From Lee, very exciting. I don't mean to be ungrateful, but are there any plans to increase input amounts to increase complexity of the library, essentially optimize transposase concentration for different input amounts? At this point, we are not working on that. I believe that, you know, with the way we have our products laid out in our portfolio, we have the SureSelect XT, which covers the 3 microgram high end of input, SureSelect XT low input, which covers the 200 nanogram, or XT2, which covers the 100 nanogram input, and then QXT for the 50 nanogram. So it's really a matter of positioning your customers based on their need on which one is the best recommendation. So very important to keep in mind that as we talk to our customers, their need is what will guide us to what kit to recommend. Okay, from Jan, can you comment further regarding the use of BioAnalyzer and TapeStation for the QC steps with the QXT protocol? So BioAnalyzer and TapeStation are both supported in our protocol, as with every other SureSelect kit. From Ram, do you have an idea of the difference in efficiency of library prep using QXT versus XT? So just a little bit more clarity on your question, Bram. Are you referring to the efficiency of adapter ligation and ultimately the complexity generated by the pre-capture amplification step? Is that what you're referring to? Okay, maybe we can get back to that question in the interest of time.
You said yes, Maria. Yeah, you said that's exactly what it was.
Okay. So, R&D, do you mind commenting? I'm not exactly sure whether a direct comparison, a head-to-head, has been done between the XT and QXT adapter ligation step.
I don't think we looked at the ligation efficiency. If that's what you mean, so ligation efficiency is normally about 20% of all the material that's in there that gets ligated. I don't think we've looked to see what the efficiency of adapter integration for transposase is. So, no, we don't know.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Baram, I think. From Bram, as variations in input amount can affect the fragmentation of the sample, they have a series of traces to indicate up to what point a library is okay to sequence and what the effect on sequencing metrics will be. And I believe Mike had actually shown a great series of traces that actually correlates with the sequencing metrics. So with, you know, once you guys have this slide set, then you will have that information. From Frida, will QXT be available for ion proton as well? Would be a great help against AmpliSeq.
So not at this time. The first release is targeted towards Illumina, primarily just because it's the largest sequencing, you know, on the market. But proton is currently in discussion.
Thank you, Yong. From Scott, can you comment on lot-to-lot variability of the enzyme? I've had several Nextera customers decide against that method because they report variations in enzymatic activity. Just to kind of comment on that, I believe, and, you know, I've heard the same comment, but I believe that comment is related to the GC content, which really affects the fragmentation profile. I'm not sure about the lot, whether that's direct, they've actually linked it directly to production lot variability. But I have heard a lot of comments that it's related to the GC content. That being said, as far as our lot of the enzymes are concerned, variability has been minimal. We've done testing. Again, we're still generating stability data and all these other metrics to really investigate this. But up until this point, we've seen minimal variability. Okay, will we get the slides? We will be releasing the slides at the end of January, so that would be next week. From Chi, would it be beneficial for a user to adjust sequencing read length according to the profile? The way the protocol is optimized really is dependent on the metrics that we've presented, and that includes the target fragment length and basically the sequencing recommendations result from that as well. So with regards to adjusting the sequencing read length, if it's very close to what we have on our protocol, I would recommend against it because this just opens it up to a lot of other questions and support issues. However, that being said, if the fragment length is too large, I would be concerned about proceeding, mainly because if it's not within the range that Mike and Jeff and Connie have presented, I would recommend against it because this might indicate a bigger problem and you may be, you know, running into issues with the quality of the library that you're generating. From Jean, are duplicates removed in analysis? Yes, they are. Again, from Jean, is the session being recorded? I believe it is. And, Raza, you can correct me if I'm wrong on that.
Yeah, we'll send a link post-training. So, yeah, we'll share that with everyone.
Thank you, Raza. From Chi, will we adopt FastTime for XT and XT2 so far? So how far off are we? So we are looking into this. I cannot comment on how far off are we at this time. From Scott, would using a larger fragmentation for target enrichment samples help boost library complexity to make product more applicable to cancer samples? It would take a hit on target percent, but that may be acceptable if you're generating confident variant calls in those samples. So, in terms of improving complexity through increasing insert length, I actually, and guys, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think they're directly related. The complexity is related to the uniqueness of the fragments that are being generated. And because the transposase technology works off of recognition sites on the template, this will ultimately determine the complexity of your library. So providing larger inserts does not really impact it much. From Mike, what is being accounted for differently when we say 3.5 3.5-hour workflow versus 7.5 hours. So 3.5 hours is hands-on time. The 7 hours is the overall workflow, and that includes the incubation time. Frida, are the special recommendations for FFPE samples? So we have not tested FFPE samples with the QXT, and there may be a lot of optimization required in order to make it work with FFPE. But we are looking into this. This is an active investigation. From Bram, have you checked whether translocation events can be picked up, and if so, would there be a benefit of adding more DNA to achieve slightly larger fragments to help map the chimeric reads? So definitely longer inserts would help in mapping out these kinds of events that require a lot more confidence in flanking sequences being mapped back to the genome. Have we looked at the detection of translocation events in samples that we have run for validation? We have not. For Jennifer, sorry to beat the topic to the ground, but if we could provide both bio and tape station profile images, yes, our early access protocol has just been updated to include tape station images. So the final protocol, which will be released, will have this as well. From Jean, earlier someone said average size is 600 to 1,000 BP, now it's 245 is optimal. Can you clarify? So the larger insert, 600 to 1,000, is for whole genome sequencing. Very important distinction. For target enrichment, you need shorter reads in order to make it compatible with the sequencing read length and how we calculate our metrics. So again, large insert, 600 to 1,000 BP, whole genome sequencing, 245 to 325 target enrichment, and that's all spelled out very clearly in the protocol. Brian, how many gigs per sample for this data? And I believe you may be referring to the kinome data. Is that right? That was presented earlier. So for kinome, we normalized to 3 million reads. With the V5 all exon, we normalized to 40 million reads. And that's 4 gigs of sample at 2x100, yes. Again, from Brian, just to confirm how much DNA input was for this data, it is 50 nanograms. Ralph, can you tell us about QXT exome versus rapid exome from Illumina? Would love to. So QXT exome versus Nextera rapid capture. So we still outperform the Nextera rapid capture, though even though we've shortened the workflow. The performance is maintained. Our on-target is higher. Our coverage is higher. And all of this data will be presented at the sales training. From Ralph, when can we expect to compete against AmpliSeq on ion and lowest input way faster kit? So I think Yong had already addressed this question earlier. From Lee, are there any plans to adapt this approach to methyl-seq, larger input, no PCRs to lose methylation status before bisulfite treatment?
It's possible, but this is another thing that we're going to have to evaluate as far as time and effort. So we'll have to get back to you on that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Yong. From Mike, when would we expect to adapt it to custom? Not really sure what that means. If I don't know if this question refers to the compatibility of QXT with custom panels. Is that right? If that's the question, then yes, it is already compatible with custom panels. From the DA, do you have a comparison with Illumina and NimbleGen kits and impact on sequencing results? So as I mentioned earlier, we are generating this data, and hopefully I'll have it for the sales training. From Jean, is this available for human only? Nope. You can actually do it for even bacterial genomes. So it applies to animal, plants, and humans as well. From Ralph, what do we have to tell people who want to switch from XT to QXT, what to consider regarding automation and their data quality? Data quality is maintained between XT and QXT, as we showed you earlier. Automation, we are working on automating QXT, so at that point in time, XT and QXT will both be automated. So the real driver for shuttling them from one kit to another really is the need. Is there a need for low input? Is there a need for short turnaround time? Is there a need for high complexity libraries? So for high complexity libraries, again, shuttle them to XT. If the need is for a faster, easier, less hands-on time workflow, and the 1 hour Hybe really will make a differentiator for this customer, then shuttle them to QXT. From Michael, do you have data on SNP detection accuracy from sequencing a half-mast sample? Yes, we do, so this will all be covered in the sales training. From Jennifer, in the timeline for QXT processing, I noticed we don't factor in QC in the bio-A, just wanted to point that out. Good point, thank you. From Melissa, I'm writing answers to questions in Q&A, and we'll share the documents with everyone after the training. From Jean, why can hype time be so low? What about library prep that makes the hype so efficient? So you have to uncouple library prep from the fast hype. The fast hype technology is enabled primarily due to, you know, R&D's major advancements, and they've worked really hard on making this something that we could utilize. There are major improvements in the formulation of the reagents. There are improvements in the workflow that all contribute to the faster hype time and overall workflow. From Jean, it seems strange that wash 1 is at room temperature, then wash 2 is at 65 degrees. What's the rationale behind this? Mike, would you like to comment on this question?
Room temperature wash is more of just sort of a rinse, and it gets it just helps get a lot of the gunk out of there before you start your more finer-tuned, higher temperature washes. It just makes the high temperature washes a little more effective. But that's also, like I said, the XT also uses the same format. It has a room temperature wash and then your 65 degree washes. So we've pretty much stayed consistent that way.
Thank you very much, Mike. From Josh, for target enrichment, besides HapMap DNA samples, what other types of DNA have you tried? Cell line blood, have you compared any DNA extraction kits? No, we have not compared the DNA extraction kits. La Jolla R&D, would you like to comment on other types of DNA that were tested aside from the HapMap DNA?
We tested three bacterial genomes, a high GC, low GC, and E. coli, and that's how we got our feeling for the different percent GC, but they all work.
Thank you very much, Connie. How much difference can occur with different PCR instruments due to the cycle, 60-degree cycle, 37, the up and down shifting of the temperature? I guess the bottom line here is that as long as your PCR machine is calibrated, it should maintain the same temperature. It should allow you to perform the same way. Mike, can you comment on the effect of the ramp rate?
Yeah, the main difference you would see is slightly different ramp rates, which if it's a slower ramp rate, you'll just get a little bit extra overall hive time. It doesn't have any significant effect, so there won't be any variation between thermal cyclers.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Mike. So in the interest of time, because Anique has to go on her part of the training, we'll address the rest of the questions, I guess, in a document that will be sent out to you guys. Thank you all very much for your attention. If there are any questions, please feel free to reach out to me. Have a great day.
Thank you. This does conclude today's conference. We appreciate your participation.
Okay, so
Maria
had to go to another training and another call. So as Maria mentioned, we will actually take a list of all those questions. We will ask Maria and Yong to provide written feedback to these questions as well. So you actually have something that you can use during your sales discussions. As you can see, this actually generated a lot of discussion and a lot of feedback, which is great. So, I think, we need to do that, and hopefully we can get this, you know, in a few days, maybe early next week or something. But I will liaise with Maria and Yong to get written feedback on all the questions that we have in the chat box. So thank you very much for that. So if we can move forward to the next part of the presentation, Anique, and she can provide basically feedback around SureCall. Over to you, Anique.
Okay. Thank you. So the last 25 minutes or so of this technical training, I'll go over the launch of SureCall 2.0. So as always, SureCall 2.0 is free of charge and will stay free of charge. So this needs to be positioned in terms of the in part of the entire workflow. So that's why I'm putting up this workflow piece again. So where you design your custom panels in SureDesign, or of course you can also use a catalog product. So you do your target enrichment with Halo or SureSelect. So that's a new thing, of course, for SureCall 2.0, that it supports SureSelect data as well. Then you sequence on your desktop or your high-throughput sequencer, and then you interpret your data into SureCall. So today's presentation, I will give a short introduction, actually about sequencing in general. These slides I'll go quickly over because this is, you guys all know this, but when I was giving SureCall trainings to people who are new to NGS, they had like still a lot of confusion. What is a FASTQ file? What is a BAM file? So I put some slides together for you that you can use maybe in your trainings on next-gen sequencing, especially for customers who are new to next-gen analyzing next-gen sequencing data. Then I'll go over the new features in SureCall 2.0. Then a little bit about installation. How do you install 2.0? Then where you get some more information and then hopefully some time for questions and answers. So first of all, about next-gen sequencing data. Like I was mentioning, these slides are really that you know all this, but for your customers new to sequencing, I wanted you to have these slides. And I describe here the stages of next-gen sequencing analysis. So where the primary analysis is basically the base calling. And then, so that's what's done on the sequencer, the sequencing control software, and then you get a FASTQ file, and which also has the quality of the read. So this is the input for SureCall, is basically the FASTQ files. So both from Illumina or IonTorrent. So SureCall does accept the FASTQ files. Then the secondary part of next-gen sequencing analysis is basically the alignment. So this is also included in SureCall. So you put in your FASTQ file, then you use the aligner, and then you end up with a BAM file. You can also choose actually to start from a BAM file in SureCall, but the recommendation is basically to start from the FASTQ file. Then you have all the right trimming and everything, which is especially important for QXT, which Maria just talked about. So you do need to do separate trimming for the QXT, so that's where SureCall comes in, where you can do the trimming in SureCall. So then once you have a BAM file, you basically then go into the variant caller, and then you end up with a VCF file. And then from the VCF file, that's where the tertiary analysis kicks in. And this is actually where a lot of software only can be used, is starting from the VCF file, where you do then your additional filtering. You can do that based on the read depth and the quality score. There, that's more on the quality of the sequencing data. But then you can also start to interpret your data. You can start filtering based on population frequency, on the impact of the variant, the functional prediction, how it was inherited. So all that can be also be done in SureCall. Then you end up with a mutation report, and then what people typically do is then use that data to make a final report for that particular case. So like I was mentioning, these are the steps that are included in SureCall. So you start from your FASTQ file all the way to the mutation report. So, and in summary, so SureCall was developed for the clinical researcher. So SureCall is an easy-to-use tool, and it's for adjuvant target enrichment, free of charge. So it's from small panels all the way to exomes and including QXT as well. So it's for clinical research, so it's human only, and it is not meant to do like comparisons between a treated and an untreated group and things like that. That is more for GeneSpring. For SureCall is really the easy workflow where you have one particular case that you go all the way through. So it's the whole point is that you analyze your data in instead of using days in hours, you now get your analysis. So from the alignment all the way to the categorizations of mutations, and it is still free of charge for all Haloplex and now also SureSelect users. So as soon as somebody has ordered a SureSelect panel, they will be able to analyze that data into SureCall. So now what is new in SureCall 2.0? So instead of in 1.0 and 1.1, we had one workflow for single sample analysis. We now also do pair analysis and trio analysis. So again, keep in mind it's all for clinical workflow. So we now also have the pair analysis, which you use to determine copy number changes. So, and we use a normal reference to determine the copy number changes in your sample of interest. And then you can also use the pair analysis to do a tumor versus normal sample. So that is for, of course, solid tumors where the labs do have a matched normal. So then you can basically use your normal sample to find the somatic mutations in your tumor sample to make your analysis easier. And then finally, we now also have the trio analysis. So typically, a mother, a father, and a child. So this is where I mostly see like clinical exomes, where otherwise if you do an exome or a clinical exome, you will get a ton of variants that you're going to have to sift through. So what would make it easier if you have also a mother and a father to go with that? So that's where also SureCall now kicks in, and you can do trio analysis. So with that, with the three different methods now, the single sample, which we used to have already, the pair analysis and the trio analysis, we now have default analysis methods. So there's now five default analysis methods, the same ones that we used to have with a single sample. So there is the default one, which is based on a BAQ, so from the SAM tool, so that's open source. And then we also developed our in-house algorithm, Snippet. So we're making more and more improvements to that algorithm, and I have more and more confidence that this is really a better algorithm to use than the BAQ algorithm. And especially for cancer samples, Snippet is basically the only option because that is the algorithm that will detect low allele frequency variants, whereas BAQ will not be able to detect low allele frequency variants. Then we have the default copy number method, which is under the pair analysis, which also is using Snippet. Same for the default tumor normal method and the trio method. So we really developed Snippet much further to also be able to analyze these pair analysis and trio analysis samples. So there is one method for both Halo and SureSelect, but in the background for SureSelect, and that's regular SureSelect, so SureSelect XT, there is no adapter trimming, but the duplicates are removed and the regions are padded with 100 base pairs. So that's the default setting for SureSelect. For SureSelect QXT, you would turn on the adapter trimming, even for SureSelect. And then you would, of course, also remove duplicates and probably leave the region padding with 100 base pairs. So these were the five default analysis methods. you can also make your own custom analysis methods, and you can basically make changes to the methods at the different steps. You can make changes to the trimmer. You can pick which aligner you use, whether you want to remove duplicates, yes or no, whether you want to fix the mates, yes or no, which variant color you use, so that's just BAQ or snippets. Then this is a very new section as well, is to filter the variants, so we have more options in filtering variants. Then which mutation impact you're going to use, basically which annotations. And then you can also, this is also brand new, to add your own annotations. So this is something that a lot of customers are asking for. They know certain clinically significant variants, and they want to basically add their own annotations that they know beforehand so that they will show up in the triage view. So we also have that now. So in the next two slides, I have some examples of when you would use basically your own setting versus the default settings. So first is an example that I think will be used a lot, especially for exomes, is where you analyze only a subset of the region from your original design. So instead of analyzing the entire exome, which is a lot of data and a lot of variants, basically you want to filter those variants based on what we call a track. So you decide which region you want to analyze. So I've seen this used quite a bit. So people, for example, do whole exome sequencing, but then they analyze, for example, only the genes that are that have been correlated in the past with hearing loss, for example. So you put in your regions that you are interested in analyzing, and then the variants for only those regions will show up in your final reports. Another thing is the filter, the mutations based on the read depth. In SureCall 1.0 and 1.1, this was hidden in the back. We had the filter set at 40. Now that is exposed, and basically you can filter based on the read depth, so how much read depth there is there at that particular location. So you can set the read depth differently for the point mutations versus the indels. Another reason why you would make changes to the default workflows is when you want to use a different aligner. So now we have, for Illumina data, both BWA and BWA-MEM, so which is an improvement over BWA, but some people maybe are used to using the standard BWA, so they can move it back to that one. So BWA-MEM is now the default aligner that is used in SureCall. For IonTorrent, it's still TMAP. So keep in mind, because we have new aligners, and you install 2.0, and I will go over that once I get to the installation. Basically, we have new aligners. We made improvements to the aligners, so you will also have to reinstall the aligners to take the full advantage. So another example why you would change your why you would change the settings and not use the default analysis methods is those track-based annotations. So what I mentioned before, basically you have a list of mutations with their particular annotations. So you can import that now into SureCall as a list, and then that list will show up in the triage view. So I've put here, watch the tutorial video, so we will have, again, new videos for SureCall 2.0, and I would definitely recommend that you watch this video to learn how to do that. Actually, the video is already up on our website, so you can go there and look at those videos. And then the last example, why you would use a different analysis method besides the default one, is to make changes in the categorization. So you know a category one is which those variants are very significant, so and most likely pathogenic. So, and these are then the reasons why something would make it a category one. You can, and the category two and so on and so forth. So you can make changes there that you can make something a category two instead of a three based on these, on this evidence. So, SureCall 2.0 has the same easy workflow as 1.0 and 1.1, so I didn't want to make it any more complicated. So you still import your sample, you describe your samples, and then you run your analysis. So in the description of the samples, you can have many different choices. You can put date the sample was collected. You can have a record ID for that sample. So then it's actually quite important to use that functionality because then later on, everything goes in a database. So SureCall has a database. Everything goes in there, and then you can easily search for your samples in that database depending on which annotations that you use. So I think it's important to teach your customers to start using how to describe the samples so that then the database can be used fully. They'll still the same, the view for the triage view between 1.0.1.1 and 2.0. We didn't make any significant changes. So there is a mutation table that has all the mutations on the top and then the genome viewer at the bottom. Which loads the VCF file, the BAM file, and then the genes and the exons, etc. This has not changed, so I'll skip this over. I just left it in the slide deck so that you have a complete slide deck if you want to present SureCall 2.0 to your customers. Then this is something new, so. We have heard from a lot of customers that they want to know which regions are not covered properly. So we definitely made improvements there. So where you can now see per exon which exon does not have sufficient coverage. So the way you do that is you go into the QC matrix. There you set at which read depth you want to report out the regions that do not have sufficient read depth. So, for example, you can put it at 20 or at 40, whatever, how low. It depends on how low the variance, the frequency of the variance you want to go to. So, for example, 20 will probably be fine if you want to not go too low. If you want to detect low frequency variance down to 5%, 20 reads will not be sufficient because you basically will only have one read that has that. So you set your threshold there, and now you can go into the triage view where you can then select the show the regions below the threshold or show the exons below the threshold, and then they will show up here at the bottom. So you will see your analyzable target region that you originally put into SureDesign, your amplicons, and then your exons below the threshold. And then you can zoom in further and go look which particular base does not have enough coverage. So that was made a significant improvement into SureCall 2.0. Then I have the next slides are some examples of things you can now find with SureCall 2.0. For example, a low frequency mutation. This one is at 4%, so that's really low. It happens to be in the NRAS gene, so this is a gene that is relevant in cancer and that people definitely want to find low allele frequency variants. So we are able to do that with snippets. And now we also have the cosmic annotations that show up in the triage view. The next slides, I explain a little bit about snippets, so when to use snippet versus SAMTools. So because SAMTools has several limitations, it does not detect low allele frequency variants. It also does not handle mosaic samples very well. And then it also is very picky in terms of how good the quality of the reads has to be. and it will basically remove lots of variants because of that. So you will miss a lot of variants when using snippets. Also, realignment does not work very well with SAM tools. So if there's two variants close together, it will also miss that. So that's why we came up with a new in-house developed algorithm called Snippet. So then on this next slide, I have some more information about how Snippet works. It basically relies on the fact that if there's two variants that occur at the same frequency, it's probably a real variant and not a sequencing error. So basically it does some kind of haplotyping. So that's how we determine it's a real variant versus a sequencing error. Then the second example I want to show you is now a copy number change. So this is a 100 base pair deletion that we found. This happens to be on chromosome 7. So this is how it will show up in the triage view when you run the pair analysis with the copy number method. So you will show up here, for example, 100 base pair deletion, and this CNV so was validated because it was already found with NextGene software as well. So we can now detect that in SureCall 2.0. We find these copy number changes. So this is basically ideal now to replace MLPA as a technique to find those copy number changes in exons or around exons. So a little bit of explanation on the copy number methods. So we're using, just like CGH, we're comparing a normal sample versus your experimental sample. In a lot of cases, you can actually use another sample also as reference. I've done that as well, because the chances that two samples actually have the same copy number change is pretty low. So if you don't have a normal sample, you can actually use two samples against each other, or you can even analyze the same sample against different references to give you even more confidence. You can change the window size of the copy number change, and then as I've shown in the previous slide, it will show up basically as a heat map in the IGV viewer. Then in terms of the mutation table, so there, same thing as in 1.0 and 1.1, you can filter more. So you can do the filtering, a lot of filtering up front in your analysis methods. But then once you start interpreting your data, we put as many tools as possible then to do the filtering into the triage view. So you can filter more on the read score and the read depth, for example, in the quality score, and then you can start filtering on more of the biological relevant mutations. So we have allele frequencies, population-based allele frequencies, so if it's a very common mutation in the population, that probably it's not pathogenic, it's most likely benign, so you would want to filter that out. Same with synonymous variants versus non-synonymous variants. If it's synonymous variants, again, you would probably want to filter that out. Most likely it doesn't have an impact on the protein, so it's probably not that important. Same with functional predictions. So we have SIFT scores and PolyFAN scores. So again, we provide as many tools as possible to start filtering out those mutations down to the relevant mutations. So especially for exomes, you will have a lot of variants. So this filtering will become more and more important to do that. Another thing that is new in SureCall 2.0 is basically where you can now select which transcript you're looking at. So it used to be like the primary transcript that only was reported out. So based on customer feedback, it's also important to actually look at the different transcripts. And now you can select on the drop-down which transcript you want to report out. Other things, you can still add notes, and you can also suppress mutations that you don't want to show up then in the mutational report. Another significant improvement in Shortcall 2.0 is that we made changes and a better reporting of variants that were found in different samples. So as I mentioned before, so Shortcall has the database, so all your samples end up in the database once you sign them off. So then now you can look basically for other samples with the same variant. So in the triage view, you stay on that variant, and then you go to data search, search variants, and then you will find out which other samples have the same variant in your database. And then you will end up with a list of samples that have that same variant. Then you can click on that sample, and then that one will open up in the triage view so you can compare there as well. In terms of reports, so we still have the mutation report. We have a QC report that is now significantly improved. We now have graphs in the QC report, whereas it used to be just text. Now we have the numbers, but also the graphs that make it probably easier to interpret to see how the sequencing and the target enrichment worked. And you can still make your own report. If you don't want to use the mutation report, you can basically export the table in an Excel format, or you can export whatever you see in the viewer. So whatever you did from filtering in the triage view, that filtering will be applied in those reports as well. Then in terms of other important features, and especially for clinical researchers, so we have that check-in, check-out, and sign-off of samples. So before you can make any changes to the sample, so before you can start filtering or adding notes, you have to check out the sample from the database. Then you can make changes to it. You check it back in. Somebody else can then take that sample, check it back out, make additional changes on top of that, or make additional notes. And then once it is done, then you basically sign off your sample, and that's when the sample data gets added to the database and the mutation report gets generated. Everything is tracked in an audit trail, so you know who made what changes to which samples. And there's also different user roles. So technicians can just run a preset workflow. Scientists can make new workflows. And administrators can, of course, do everything. They can add users, change workflows, and anything else. Then in terms of installation, so Shortcall 2.0 will be supported on two operating systems, so Windows 7, 64-bit, and Mac operating system. So we will be releasing also at AGBT, official release at AGBT, but I'm hoping I can give you guys early access to an earlier build. And then at AGBT will be Windows version, and then about 6 weeks later after the launch of the Windows, we will also have Mac 2.0. You can use three different flavors of installation. You can do standalone, so you do everything on one machine, like I've been doing on my laptop, for example, that you can do as well. You can do the client-server installation. So the server means that all your data, that's where all your data will reside, all your PCF files, and that's where then you can pull data from other computers that have the client-only installation. So the client-only will always have to go together with the client-server installation as well. Then in terms of how to install 2.0, so for people who have 1.0 or 1.1, of course, the most straightforward way is to completely uninstall 1.1 and do a reinstallation of 2.0. And then, of course, you lose all your data that's in your 1.0, your 1.1 database. So we also have the option that you actually can keep all your data. and then you upgrade your SureCall 1.1 server to a 2.0 server and install the new client. So everything is very nicely explained in the installation guide. So two options, or you just start all over basically, or you upgrade from 1.1 to 2.0 so that you can keep your data that's in 1.1. Another improvement that we made is the annotation download from the cloud. So as you know, so there's a lot of annotations and the reference genome that gets downloaded from the Amazon cloud. So this is not from Agilent, this is from Amazon. And of course it takes a long time. It depends on your internet speed. So we decreased the size from 50 GB to 20 GB. So we did some smarter compression and things like that. So that should make it a little bit easier to do that. Like I already mentioned, we made significant improvements to the aligners. There's a new aligner. To the existing aligners, we also made significant improvements, so it highly recommends actually reinstall the aligners. And if you want to use BWA MEM, you're going to have to install the aligners as well. Because it's open source, we kind of bundle those two installers together. So we had to keep those installers separate. So like I was mentioning, there is an installation guide for 2.0 that explains how to do the installation and things like that. So there is more information. So like I was already mentioning, there are the video tutorials. Now there's in total 7. They're all been updated for SureCall 2.0. They are available from the SureCall homepage or from the SureCall website. There is the application note that explains about SureCall. I'm updating the battle card so that you can compare. There is a new flyer that we've updated to indicate that now SureCall can also analyze SureSelect data. There are these PowerPoint slides. I also have customer-facing power slide deck, and there is demo data on our website as well. Okay, so with that, there's 10 minutes left to go over the questions, so let me scroll back up and see where we are. From G, is the primer going to be made available? Excuse me?
Yeah, no, that's fine, Anika. I was just going to point out the particular question, but you got there. Great.
Okay, thanks, Rosa. From Jean, is the trimmer going to be made available as a standalone tool like promised in October? So I think so, yes. I've been talking about SureCall. So SureCall will have the trimmer for the QXT data. But I heard, I think, from Maria that there will be a standalone tool as well that will be made available for people who don't want to analyze mouse or rat data and things like that. I answered that question already. From Ralph. No chance to find chromosomal recombination with SureCall when SureSelect is used. So we have not looked at recombinations, like what Maria was already mentioning. We have not done that yet. From Ralph, will filtering of variants work with any external database? So basically, if you import like the track-based annotations, so you import whatever annotations you have from another database, you import it into SureCall, that will show up as an extra column in the triage view, and indeed then you can start filtering on that field as well. From Scott, is there capability to do CNV analysis with just a single sample? Example versus the reference genomes instead of a paired sample. That is not possible right now, but like I was mentioning, you can easily use another sample as your reference. So against the reference genome, that is not possible because, I mean, the reference genome is supposedly diploid everywhere. as you know, with sequencing and especially with target enrichment, there is bias in terms of how much sequencing you will get at certain locations. So there's one, the sequence itself, depending on the GC contents of the sequence, you will have more or less read depth. Then on top of that, there's the target enrichment part. There will be more or less sequencing based on the efficiency of the capture. Depending on which capture method you use, there will be more or less variability across. And then also the PCR step will also introduce some differences, and then the sequencing itself, like I was mentioning, GC content, et cetera. So basically what it comes down to, there's a lot of variation across the genome, how much read depth you have. So, but fortunately, it seems to be pretty reproducible. So for certain regions of the genomes that get lots of reads, another sample would also get a lot of reads. So that's why it is possible to actually analyze your sample against another sample that was captured with the same way. So the more similar the samples are, the better your copy number data is going to be, just like in CGH. And that's why it's possible to do your analysis against another sample that was captured the same way with the same capture kit and the same sequencing and everything. So definitely that is the way to go for a CNV analysis. From Josh, for SureSelect, if the default has padding regions, will the padded region only be used for the on-target percent calculation, or is that also used for the metrics such as percent of bases over 10x or 20x reads? That's something I'm going to have to check with the development team, how the padding changes that. Yes, I don't know. I'm going to have to check that question. From Jean, can users add new supporting evidence fields? So, yes, like I was mentioning, I would highly recommend to look at that video, how to add more fields to your triage view that you can then later filter on. Then another question from Gene and follow-up. Particularly since they can add their own mutations, they might want to add new fields to the categorization. So I think you mean they add their own annotations. And yes, so that is something that we currently cannot do. The categorizations are those 80 evidence things that you can select from. That is something for SureCall 3040 that we can, that we definitely is on the list that you can then choose your own annotations to put it in any categorization. So we are definitely working on that. It's not in SureCall 2.0. From Ralph, any recommendations to use the software online or offline? Definitely online. So then you get all the annotations from the NCBI Variation Reporter, the most updated ones. You can also use the software offline. If you don't have internet access at a particular point, then it will use the annotations that it had downloaded once you downloaded the design. From Bran, regarding regions with sufficient read depth, is there a way to automatically scroll to the next event? No, yeah, that's a good point. We currently do not have that, but that's actually a good suggestion to be able to do that. Yes, no, we don't have that right now. There's the file with the exons below a certain read depth and the regions is also in the output workflow, so you can look there at the list of all the regions of all the exons, but we don't have currently a way to jump from one region to the next. But that's a good suggestion. Again, from Ralph, any percent limits known to find rare mutations with what we offer with SureCall? So basically, you can the limit in SureCall is 1%. You can put it as low as 1%. Of course, you need a certain read depth to do that. If you have 100 reads, keep in mind 1% is one read of those 100. So that is really low. Even 1,000 reads, you still only have 10 reads. So, of course, there might be some false positives there if you go down that low. So that's kind of up to you. It's always going to be a balance between false positives and false negatives. If you really want to go very low, you will have to then live with the risk that you will start picking up some false positives. And always keep in mind, like, if you go down to 1%, 1% is really 1%, 1 out of 100 reads. So that's really low. From Brian, have we discussed providing customers with normal reference sample? So we definitely thought about that. The problem is, of course, our main selling point of all our kits are we have that customization part. You can design any design you want, Ensure Design for Halo, for Sure Select. So you can have, we have so many different options in Sure Design. You can do padding, you can do exons, you can do whatever you want, basically, which is great for our customers, but makes it hard to provide customers with normal reference data. Normal reference sample, I guess there you could use, in theory, from the CGH kit, that we have normal actual male and female, if that's really something that people would want to use for their NGS data. I'm not sure how much better or more useful it is than any other reference sample that they would use for next-gen sequencing. From Ralph, what can we expect on average for human exome analysis in terms of time to results? So that's a good question. So I've been asking the development team to basically give me some benchmark data. What I've seen so far is like in the range of 4 hours per exome, and that is with snippets. Snippets is significantly faster than VAQ, and that would be also with Illumina data. So it depends a little bit on all your settings, but probably it's going to be in the range of 4 hours, something like that. From Gene, SureCall only works for humans, so QXC term needed for non-humans, that's what I mentioned, yes. From Bram, sorry, meant insufficient read depth. I think I caught that. From Frida, last question. Will latest annotations databases be used per default if user is online? If yes, can you lock the software to use a specific version? So it will go online to get the latest annotations for certain columns. The other columns are basically uploaded when you do the 20 GB download from the cloud. If you don't want to have that that live update, basically you can run SureCall offline, and then it will not do any more annotations. But from talking to customers, what I've noticed that they usually want actually the latest from NCBI. Okay, and that was the last question.
Thank you very much, everybody. Yep, thank you very much for the comprehensive presentation and the in-depth discussion. So as usual, great, thank you. And thank you to everyone on the TC as well with the questions. So great to see a lot of feedback around target enrichment and NGS software analysis, which is great. So as I mentioned, we'll record the questions, and I will go back to Maria and Anik just to get some written responses, because I think with the launches coming up, it would be a really good tool for the field to utilize in in when discussing with customers in due course. So I think I'll get you to get that feedback and get you the content with that. And I think with that, I think we can close the call and say thank you very much to everyone, especially to all the speakers today, and thank you for you for being patient and intensive for 2 hours. With that, have a pleasant day. Thank you.
Thank you. This does conclude today's conference. We appreciate your participation.